4 years in here, he's referred me to one of the books that I love and that I read all the time now. And the other thing is he's kind of a little bit serious. I don't mean that badly, but it's what I need. There's sometimes in my program I really need to look at things at a deeper level, and Roger's always been able to have good conversations with me to help me with that. So I'm very grateful, and I'd like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Roger. Yeah.
Roger. And I'm grateful to be here, and I'm grateful I didn't have to spend a month sweating over this. As I mean, this is where I grew up in this room, but I'm still nervous, yet a lot of the people that knew I was speaking, obviously, were happy to hear that, so that made me feel good. Could we just have a short second of meditation to start with? I heard that Lois used to do that, and somebody asked her what she did when she did that, and she said she invited God to come to the room, and that's what I try to do. So welcome to the newcomers. The fact that you guys could say you are new means you already have the courage to work this program. I could not say I was new when I first came, and incidentally, the people they ask to speak generally are not people who know everything. They're people who are like the least likely to succeed, I think. Because I was angry when I came here. I have a sponsor. He's in the room. He has a sponsor. He's in the room. Some of the guys I sponsor are in this room. And this is where I grew up, like I said. This is my home group. I've been coming to this meeting, I think 15 years. I've been coming to Al-Anon totally for 18 years, and it saved me. I mean, you're gonna hear about it. We have some time. So what brought me to Al-Anon was my wife's spending. She had gotten sober a few years before. She melted down on our daughter's 17th birthday, and she just turned 40. So we had a short bad patch in our marriage. And she told me that night she had a problem, and she wound up going to detox and rehab. And I have my own business. I was working a lot. And at rehab, they told me that I had a problem too and that I should go to Al-Anon. And I said to myself, well, she's the one in rehab. I have a Porsche. So obviously I was a deep thinker at the time. And I never went back to that. I didn't need to go there. Although I did go there one time, and she asked me to bring her some stuff. I never went to the family night anymore. But I went to her one time, and she asked me to bring her some things, and she asked me to bring her some hair color. And when I brought the hair color, they popped the bottle right out of the box and said, she can't have this. And I said, no, she asked me to bring that. And they said, she'll drink it. And I was like, that was the tip of an iceberg of like, I had no idea what I was up against. And she went out, she got out of this rehab, did great. And I figured part of her program was hearing how she had screwed up my life and the kids' life, and thought it would really help her to hear that on a constant basis. And I did that. And one night we were, and I don't know why, but this is true, I was more comfortable in a fight for some reason. And so I was trying to get the fight going, and she just said, I'm not letting you affect my serenity, and walked away. And I almost spontaneously combusted. I could tell you where I was in the house when that happened. Now, 99% of me was just insane, but 1% of me wanted what she had just done. I wanted to be able to take care of myself. I was just an out of control emotional roller coaster myself. I was just a blender of emotions that I could not even grasp. And but what happened was, and I don't know how it happened, she was going to meetings at this place where we live, an AA place. It's been there since the 40s, and it's like, seems like almost all bikers to me. And she started wearing biker clothes and put Harley stickers in her car. And I just had no idea what was going on. But this spending started, and she moved in with her brother, left me the big stack of paperwork, and it just blew me away. I was just blown away at how unfair it all was. And I was so angry, just angry. And so pause right there, because at the exact same time this was going on in my life, my dad was melting down. My dad was raised, you know, I think by a gnarly alcoholic. I don't know, because I was so young. But everybody hated him, and he hated everybody, except the only person he didn't hate was me. So it was very confusing for me. He was uninvited to all these places, but he was fun for me to be around, and I spent a lot of time with him. But he raised my dad, and my dad was an Al-Anon. And I can tell you that Al-Anon is a deadly disease, because it's what killed him. He could not control the world, because that's what he needed. He needed everybody else to change so he'd be okay. And he retired too early, and he didn't have the money to retire because he couldn't stand his boss. And he was just melting down in every possible way. When he did die, he died without a diagnosis, and his next door neighbor was his doctor. That's Al-Anon. His pilot light just went out. He couldn't figure life out. The only thing he taught me was how to not be like him. And he died. So while this was going on, he was a hoarder as well. And I'm having to take care of my dad. My sister lives, he has one other kid, my sister, and she lives far away. And I'm taking care of my dad. I'm working my business, which is doing great. I'm out of money. Can't figure any of this out. Going through my dad's stuff. He's going from the nursing home to the hospital. I think he had a stroke. I don't know what happened because we weren't talking. And I was a wreck, a complete wreck. And I stopped at a gas station to get gas, and my card was denied. And I have a good business. I make good money. And I was always trying to earn enough money so I wouldn't have to trust God. And I was on my way to doing that, I thought. And I sat in my truck, and I cried, and I cried. I had no idea how my life had gotten to this point. None. My best thinking was, I just got unlucky and married a crazy chick. That's what I thought. That was my best thinking. And one of my clients recognized that I was a disaster and gave me some Al-Anon CDs. And I listened to these CDs because I'm a big audiobook listener. And it was no big deal. I just put them in and listened to them. And in all of the CDs, their story was worse than mine at the beginning. And then at the end of the CD, they were better than I was. So I wanted to be like them. And I promised myself that when my dad got into the old folks' home, I would go to Al-Anon. Oh, and one of those speakers was Mary Pearl. And because she's the craziest of all, she's the queen of crazy in Al-Anon, and she's the queen of funny. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, the person next to you does. Okay, so just ask them, or ask me, I'll tell you, she's easy to get a hold of. And I was not laughing at this time in my life. Everything was serious. I was a drag. And so I promised myself when something happened to my dad, I'd go to Al-Anon. And he died on June 1st, 2001. And I went to my first Al-Anon meeting on a few nights later on June 4th. That's the only way I know when I started, in 2001. And it was the Monday night beginners Al-Anon meeting in Valencia. And I did not say I was new. I couldn't say that. I was too arrogant too at the same time. And I listened. I just listened to these people, and I was expecting them to say, so if you just give us a check for this much money that I didn't have, we'll tell you how to get what you need, you know, the decoder ring and the handshake and all that, you know. And they never said that. And they just kept telling their stories. And then it was over. And that night I ran into somebody that I sort of knew. And that's what one of the things that made me want to come back. Nobody really talked to me that much. And most of you people know, or a lot of these people know that if you're new, I try to talk to you. Let you know that to come back, it's a friendly place. And I came back the next week, and it was kind of the continuation of the stories. And it was kind of interesting. It was a little bit of drama. And I kind of liked that. And I came back the next week, and this June, and this meeting changes their commitments in June, and somebody nominated me for literature. And I nominate Roger, and I went, I was saying no. Everything was saying no in me. I was going, and this is no kidding. A voice inside me said, don't say no. Just like that. I just heard a voice that says, don't say no. So I said yes, and they all clapped, and I didn't sleep for a few days because I knew that they were going to find out that I was useless. And I love definitions, and one of the definitions of broken is not useful anymore. And that was me. And I didn't want anybody to find that out. So I said yes, and I did it. And the next week, some little lady said, I'm new. What's a good book? I said, I don't know. I have this one. And she said, I'll take it. So I thought Al-Anon was run by the lunatics, which it is. But I thought I better read this stuff. So I bought the books and took them home and read them. And one book I read was Survival to Recovery. And I started it and I finished it. And I thought, well, I'll start it again. And when I get another book, I'll just quit reading this one. And I read it 5 times. Because I found out that when I read that when I married her, I had problems too. I did not know that. I thought it was all her fault. I blamed her. If you take the me out of blame, 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 you're left with blah, blah, blah. And I did not know that. And it's true. Hold on, senior moment. So I'm sitting in this meeting and I'm hearing everybody share. And I'm hearing the readings every week. It's like, so I'm on my fifth meeting or something and I'm like, these people are slow. Even I've heard these things too many times. But then I heard the second step. It's right there. And I thought, you know what? I can do that. I can believe that something can help me. Because certainly I couldn't do it. And then as I pondered that, I realized step one worked me. And I looked up, one of my sponsees said to me one time, how can I be restored to sanity if my family's not sane? And I thought, well, that's a good question. So I looked up the word restore. And it doesn't mean what we think it means now, that you get something back that you had. It doesn't mean that. It means the real definition of it from the dictionaries of when it was written, it's to get something that is yours, that you were born to have. You can be born sick and get better. You can be born into slavery and become free. You can be born insane and become sane. It's a birthright. God gave it to you. You just got to get it. And while I was looking, while I was in the dictionary, I looked up sanity. That seemed like a good idea. And in every dictionary, including the big ones, it says the same thing, sound is a mind. So for some reason, I looked up sound. And sound is a great word. It's a whole page in those old dictionaries. It means well-made, strong, has integrity, deep, like sonar. You send a signal down to the water and information comes back. That's where my higher power is. It's down deep inside me where I have integrity, where I'm well made, where I'm strong, where I'm wise. And I can go in there and ask, and if I need help getting there, my sponsor will help me, or somebody in a meeting will help me, a CD will help me, a meeting will help me. Something will help me get to that place where I can figure out what I need. That's the good news, that it's my disease, not theirs. In step three, I thought, well, if you can do that, you don't need any more steps. I mean, if you can give your will and your life to God, then what else is there? But it isn't what it says. It just says, made a decision to give my thoughts and my actions to God. That's all it says. And I make that decision, hopefully, a lot of times in a day, and I hope I come back to that. The only thing that had helped me before I came to Al-Anon, therapy was like once a week, you know, was journaling. I did journaling out of the artist's way. If you don't know what that is, that's the other person on the other side. He probably knows. And I journaled for many, many years, and that really helped me. So when they said you have to write all this stuff down, my sponsor, he does the four-step in the AA big book column. And I thought, well, I can do that. I can write. That's no problem. So I did that. I wrote what I was supposed to write, except there's a column in that method of what is your part? What was my part in this resentment situation, which was just not fair? You're on this roll of all these people, you know, that, you know, and now what is my part in that? And that was really tough. And what I learned there was every single bit of misery I have, I created. It was not them. Blame is an awesome tool, but it doesn't work. You know, in fact, it puts you back. So when I did my fifth step, I rode around with my sponsor in his truck while he did errands, and I had my book on my lap, and I'd read across, you know, I resent this person for this, and he went, okay, all right, read another one. I said, okay. So I read another one. He went, ha, that's good. Listen to this. I did that. In fact, it was worse. Let me tell you about that. And then I read another one I thought was particularly bad. I looked over at him, and he didn't do anything. He just kept driving and said, yeah, read another one. And I started getting scared because I thought that he was going to pull over and beat me up, just like my dad would. Because in my house, if you let some vulnerability out, they're gonna use it against you. And he didn't do that. He just kept talking to me about what was going on. And when we got all done, he said, "Do you notice any pattern in what you just read me?" And I sure did. I noticed that I did not have any self-esteem. I did not know that. I noticed that I had a lot of denial. I kind of knew that. I was learning that. I was on my fourth step. I was learning that I didn't want to see things, especially in the thing about what was my part. I was learning that I had insecurity around money, that I had a lot of fear. We went back to his house. We held hands. We got on our knees. We said the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer, and he said, "Congratulations. You just did steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. And I took a year off. I didn't do any Al-Anon step work, but I did go to my meetings and do everything. I want to rewind for a second. About the time I was realizing that that this step two thing, that I could somehow get help from something that wasn't me, maybe God, I knew I needed a sponsor. And it was mostly women at the meeting that I was going to, and the men who came kind of came and went, and they weren't there very often, but there was one guy who always said something wise and humble and constructive. So I called him to see if he'd be my sponsor, because if he said no, it wouldn't be so bad. And instead he said he'd be honored. And that's something nobody had ever said to me before. And it was a big deal. And then I worked every step, did exactly what he said. I didn't realize I actually had to work them. I thought it was just kind of a like the Cub Scouts or something, you know. And it wasn't like that at all. He really wanted to philosophize on everything. So, and I did all those steps under his direction. When I said that I took a year off, I took a year off from doing step work, but what I didn't know was steps 6 and 7 were working me. I was so amazed, overwhelmed, that I had caused my own problems. It always seemed logical that somebody else did it, and it wasn't true. So I was just reeling over this. I just thinking about it all the time. And that was really my 6 and 7. By 8, I was ready to make a list because I realized I had done a lot of harm. Some of the things that were on my 8-step list weren't in my 4-step list. I was a jerk at my dad's funeral. I was a jerk to my stepmom. And we have a little ranch where we live, and we don't put rhinestone collars on our dogs and paint their nails and stuff. And I didn't treat some of them that good. And I'm ashamed of that. But it's true. And there was one guy on my in high school that I wanted to make amends to, and that was my scariest one. So when I did my 9-step, I called my sponsor and I said, I want to do my 9-step. And he said, okay. He said, I want you to call me before you make any amends so you don't do any more harm. And I did that, and I went out to my friend's house. He lives out way past Lancaster. And he just thought I was coming to hang out and visit and remember when and play guitars and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I said, no, that thing that happened that day, I did it. It was me. And he was like, what are you talking about? I said, that thing that happened that day, I did it. That was me. And he said, oh. And I had to remind him a lot about it. And he was like, okay, so what? And I said, I didn't really know what to do with that. And so we hung out and remember when. And then later on, I said, that thing that happened has really bothered me my whole life. And I didn't know it. I've just had it back in the somewhere. And he said, it's okay. And as I was leaving, I said, okay, I'm really sorry. It was so wrong what I did. But I didn't know it at the time. And he said, it's okay. And I ran into this guy came to visit me. I play in a band, and he came to see me play. And as he left, he said, I love you, man. Now, that is a miracle. My stepmom, I went to visit her, and I said I was a jerk at dad's funeral, and I was wrong to be that way. And she just hugged me. It was okay. My dogs sleep on my bed now. Right? Can't go back and fix anything, but I can change what's going on now. In step 10, it felt so good when I was driving back from that guy's house. I felt like I was flying in a glider or something. I was carrying that stuff around. I was carrying it with me, and it was heavy. And I didn't even know it, how heavy it was. And it felt so good to be rid of it that I almost flew home. In fact, I became a huge speaker CD junkie, and I listened to a Jeep on that trip out there to Lake Los Angeles. And hold on, senior moment. Where was I? Driving back from. I did as many of the step nines as I could do. I'm sorry if you're new, you're gonna have to read them up here. And I felt so good to get these things done that I wanted to do them right away, and that's step 10. You know, I was reading this thing about military warfare, and a war is going to be a lot shorter if you don't let the guys trench in. And if I let a resentment stew inside me, it's going to be a lot harder to get rid of, and I get rid of it right away. And in step 11, when I got there, I realized, you know, the only thing that's changed in my life, which is good now, is that I've worked steps. I've worked these steps. And at step 11, it talks about doing meditation and praying. And my life had changed. And I realized the only thing that had changed was Al-Anon, and I wanted more. I wanted more spiritualities. I backed off a lot on my writing, and I meditate a lot more now. About this time, somebody called and asked me if I would do a panel, take over a panel at a rehab center, and I did that, and I loved it. I love sitting here with the alcoholics and their spouses, and the alcoholics are bored looking around, and the Al-Anon is crying, you know? And I would bring people from other meetings, I mean, from my meetings like that were kind of new, and they would say all these great things, and people would hook up with them and talk afterwards, and it might have been the first time they'd ever even shared, and we had a great ride home, and I loved it. And I started a few panels, and in fact, some of them are still going. And I got a call one day, and they asked me if I would be on the World Service for institutions. And I said, yes, of course. And I called my sponsor right away and said, I'm in over my head this time. And he said, which position did you take? And I said, institutions. He said, I did that, I'll help you. And he did. And I did a pretty darn good job. I was proud of myself when I did that. And that's really hard for me to say. I had worked the 12 steps. I'd worked step 12. I was carrying the message. I was carrying the message to my kids. I was being an example to my family. And it was really lucky that I worked the 12 steps, and it's really lucky because I have a few more minutes left, like a lot more, because I was in for a new bottom. My wife had gone to a doctor who told her she wasn't alcoholic, she was bipolar, and if she would just take all these pills, she'd be fine. And that's not what happened, in my opinion. It might be a long ride home, but that is not what happened. We talked about that today. She became a zombie. Like, she didn't drool, but everything else was like really like, if I'd known this trend was happening, I would have like got her in the movies. It was bad. The best example was watching her walk down the hallway to change the temperature on the thermostat, and it took all of her concentration. And I was being around this was making me crazy. And I wanted to jump out of my skin, and I drove down. We drove down to a meeting one time down here, and she didn't say a word. She just stared out the window. She didn't even turn her head. She just stared out the window. And I was going to jump out of my skin. And I ran into, where are you, Willie? Willie here? Yeah. I ran into Willie. He said, how you doing, Raj? And I said, terrible. He said, what's going on? And I told him. And I said, what do I do? And he said, be a loving husband and keep the focus on yourself. Well, I knew how to keep the focus on myself because I'd worked the steps. But I had no idea how to be a loving husband. My dad took off and got another family when I was little. I didn't know how to be a loving husband. And I remember one day I was getting ready to go to work. And I remember thinking, you know, a loving husband would say goodbye to his wife. He'd kiss her goodbye. And when I walked back to kiss her goodbye, she was still sleeping. I would have rather thrown up in the hallway of our house than kiss her goodbye, because I was so mad. And I kissed her like on the leg so I wouldn't wake her up or anything. I just wanted to do that. And on the way back down the hallway, I realized that I had just done something loving and I felt good. And I realized that maybe if I want to get love, I need to give it. We have it here, let it begin with me, wherever that thing is. At the same time this was going on, our son was getting married. And he's in sales, and he's really successful, and he has a lot of money. He put on this killer wedding up where the bachelor was in San Diego. It's this beautiful thing, three bands, and it's a big, big deal. And my wife missed a lot of it. She missed the whatever it is that women do, the shower. She just didn't show up. She didn't show up to the rehearsal. She made it to the dinner. But my son said to me, Dad, I don't know how to get Mom to show up to the wedding. And I said, I'll take care of that, son. Okay, that's a slip. Because when I left for the wedding, I think I was wearing a tux. She was in the shower, and I know how long it takes her to get ready, and it was her son's wedding, and I was afraid she wouldn't probably make it. So I called my sponsor, I don't remember what he said. I called a couple other guys, but I called one guy who said, "You've been in boot camp all this time in Al-Anon. Today you go to war. You gotta take everything you've learned with you to the wedding." So I walked right up to my son and I said, "I don't know if mom's gonna make it or not, but let's have a great day anyway." And he hugged me and it was fine, we were okay. And to her credit, she showed up. And I'm glad she showed up mostly for her, because it would have really hurt her had that happened. And I'm really grateful that happened. And if I had like 40 more hours, I could tell you more stories. Also, at this same exact time, one of my clients came in, and she knows my wife really well, she knows me really well, and she's been at Al-Anon a long time. She said, "How's it going?" And I said, "It's going terrible." She said, "What's going on?" And I told her, and I said, "What do I do?" She said, "I can tell you what to do. It works every time, and it takes 3 weeks." I said, "What's that?" She said, "Pray for her on your knees that she gets everything she wants from her higher power for her highest good." And I couldn't process it, so I called her the next day and said, "What?" She said, "Pray for her that she gets everything she wants from her higher power for her highest good." And so I did that. I did it a couple times that day. And the next day, I did it a couple more times. And within a short time, I was doing it like 100 times or 1,000 times. Every time I thought, "You ruin my life," which makes perfect sense to me, I had to stop myself and say no. I prayed that prayer. And I did it on my knees sometimes when I could. Now what it did, I didn't know what it was going to do. I hadn't even thought about that. But what it did was it detached me. We have been married 44 years? 43. Seems like 44. So we were attached. I know everything that's going on. But the spending had come back, and I called my sponsor, and I was doing some footwork. And one morning she said, "Where are you going? You don't go to work on Wednesdays." And I said, "Well, actually, since you asked, I'm going to an attorney." She said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I want a divorce." She said, "Why?" And I said, "I don't want to live this way anymore." And I meant it. And she said, "Let's work it out." Normally when I speak, I say, "Okay," but I didn't say that really. I said, "No." And then I thought, I'm not going to call my sponsor because I know what he'd say. He'd say, "We don't shoot our wounded in Al-Anon. She deserves a second chance. Why don't you listen to what she's got to say?" So I said, what do you have in mind?" She said, "I'll go to the program for spending, I'll go back to AA, and I want to see a male therapist with you." And I said, "Well, the lady who gave me," well, I didn't say this, but I said, the lady who gave me the prayer also gave me a therapist name that day. "So you want to go see him?" And she went, "Sure." So we went to see him. And at our first session, we took separate cars. And I called my sponsor on the way to every session. I called him on the way home from some. And he said, "Just keep an open mind and listen and be honest." At the first meeting, I found out he'd been in Al-Anon for 35 years. So I called my sponsor and he said, "Okay, you're in a slip-free zone. You can say anything you want and let him correct you. For example, she doesn't go to enough meetings." He said, "It's none of your business how many meetings she goes to." That didn't sink in. I had to have my sponsor say to me, "Say the F out of her business." And I don't want to hear that again, so I don't do that. And eventually he said, "I want to talk to her by herself." I don't want it to be both of you in here. Because something had come up in our session where I heard maybe why drinking and using worked for her. And I got compassion for her as to why that worked. And I'm grateful that I don't have to have that. And I didn't say, you know, see, you're the crazy one, I'm fine. I didn't say that. I said, okay, you guys work this out. And I'm, the whole time this was all going on, I knew that I loved her, but I was mad. It was unfair, it was mad. And I'm so grateful that we're still together. Because I didn't want that to happen. My parents got divorced, and it was seriously the best thing that ever happened to me. My dad didn't want to be a dad, so I'm glad for that. But I wanted to be a dad, and I'm a good dad, and I'm even a better dad now because of these steps in this program. I have a few more minutes. A couple of things that I always talk about, page 106 in Paths to Recovery, where it's, is my action, is my response to you going to be thoughtful, honest, intelligent, necessary, and kind? We were getting in a fight one time, and I thought, okay, am I going to be thoughtful? I thought, I haven't thought about it very long, probably not. Is it going to be honest? It's going to be honest. Is it going to be intelligent? Wasn't sure about that. Is it going to be necessary? I had no idea what necessary to what was. Is it going to be kind? No. And she says, are you going to say anything? And I said, I can't think of anything to say. She told me what she wanted to hear, which wasn't what I was going to say. But I said, I'll get back to you, because she had something she wanted to happen. And I got back to her. And I said, if one thing that you wanted, I can't do, but I'll do this. And she said, okay. And this, somebody mentioned mature conversation. You know, we had a mature conversation that day. We actually communicated. And the last thing I want to say is on page 90 of the AA 12 and 12, if you're at Al-Anon, please read tradition 5 again, sorry. It says it's a spiritual axiom. I looked up the word axiom, and it means that it's true. It's spiritually true that every time I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, the problem lies within me. That's exactly what it says. And I think that's the whole point of Al-Anon. I think it's telling me that when I got a problem, the answer is in me. The problem is too, but that's the good news. The problem is in me, and the answer is in me. And all of this stuff, all of these meetings and everything else, speaker CDs, sponsors, meetings, service, all help me to find out how I can deal with myself and get better and change the world. And I have two kids that I need to be an example to, because they were raised in a house that was, our house was upside down and inside out. My daughter doesn't want to see our Christmas movies because she wasn't happy. And that breaks my heart. And I can't change that, but I can change now. So I thank you guys. Thank you, Rick, for asking me to speak.
Let's give it up again for...